From Flourish DX, this is the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. With workplace mental health becoming a safety prerogative, this is the source of information on psychological injury prevention and health promotion.
Hi, and welcome to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. My name is Jason Van Shee, and I'm one of the hosts of the show. The aim of the podcast is to rapidly increase the knowledge and application of psychological health and safety in workplaces worldwide. To help with this, we have regular guests from around the world who are leading the way in this important area. But before I introduce our guest and topic for today, allow me to introduce my co-host, Joelle Mitchell. How are you today, Joelle?
Well, after our last episode with Clive, I was a little concerned that our viewers might be getting a skewed perspective of me and my personality. And, then I was driving past a billboard advertising the Perth Museum, which has recently been reopened. And that got me thinking about my Year 12 art class. And one of the projects that we did was on insects. And my final painting was a meal, so a formal restaurant with two praying mantises having dinner together, along with the context that the female praying mantis will eat the head of the male praying mantis after mating. So it seems that thinking that, you know, that was where my thoughts were going at 17, maybe our listeners don't have that skewed of a perspective. Maybe that's just the reality, and, you know, the friendliness is a veneer that I wear over the top of my dark, disturbed soul.
It's probably good proof that personality is pretty stable.
Enduring, yeah.
Yeah, it's a stable trait.
And now that I've just thoroughly horrified all of our listeners, probably except Clive, who's likely quite delighted listening to this, let's introduce our guests.
Yeah, let's move on very quickly from that. Look, I'd now like to introduce our guests for today. That's right, you heard me correctly. I did say guests. After the Ian Firth episode where we had him represent the first state regulator, we decided to invite other state regulators onto the show and share what they're doing in the psych health and safety space. Safe Workers South Australia were the first to oblige and have provided two people to talk to. So Joe Hatchard is Principal Inspector in the Psychosocial and Industrial team, and Jason Mavrikas is a WHS Advisor in the Education team. Welcome to the podcast to you both.
Thank you.
And hopefully I did your names justice. I really should look at these names before I get on the podcast and start introducing people.
We're all human, Jason, at the end of the day.
I'm reminded every time I get on the podcast to record an episode just how human I am. How's South Australia, guys?
Yeah, not too bad. It's coming cool now. We've had a few warm weather days, but coming cool. Work is very busy, but good. Thank you.
Yeah, well, great that you guys could both allocate some time today to talk to us and share some of the wonderful things that you're doing in South Australia.
Thank you.
All right, so let's kick off with, as we ask all of our guests, what are your favourite podcasts? And we'll start with you, Jason.
Well, recently I've been listening to Brené Brown's podcast, Unlocking Us. She's a brilliant researcher and author. During our COVID lockdown last year, I read her book, Daring Greatly, which I found to be quite inspiring. And I've been getting a lot out of her podcast recently. So highly recommend that one. And another favorite that I have to mention, because I'm particularly fond of him, Alec Baldwin, the American actor. He has a podcast called Here's the Thing. And it turns out he's a great interviewer. And he has artists, musicians, writers, politicians, academics come on there, and quite diverse, really interesting. So worth checking out.
Wow, I haven't heard of that one before. So
no, yeah. I just made a note of that one.
I saw you doing that. Yeah, good. Thank you. And Joe, what about you?
Well, I have a confession to make: is that I'm old school, so I don't listen to podcasts. I'm lucky to get them up on the screen or the computer, whatever you listen them to. So easy, quick answer. I have none except for this one, of course.
That's just what we like to hear.
Yeah, yeah. We'll definitely allow you to continue on this podcast as a guest.
Thank you.
If it makes you feel better, Joe, I only started listening to them probably 2 years ago. So.
Oh, that's comforting. Thank you.
All right. And what about your professional careers to date? Can you give us a bit of a brief overview of that, Jason?
Okay, sure. I was fortunate early on in my career to win a licensing role at Workplace Services, which eventually became Safe Work SA. So I was given an insight into safety and into the profession and what it meant, and working with inspectors. And that really kind of inspired me to pursue safety. And so I left and did some further study and worked in a number of different roles at the Royal Adelaide Hospital in their safety team. I was in New South Wales at the resources regulator there as a mine safety investigator. Returned to Safe Work SA as an inspector. And now on the education team. So, yeah.
Wonderful, thank you.
Yeah, and for me, again, at old school, I've been around in the government for longer than I care to admit. Started as a base grade clerical officer, got involved right from the beginning in the occupational health division, and that's where I really formed a liking for occupational health in those days. Graduated over to industrial relations when Safe Work SA was still investigating underpayment of wages claims for the whole of the state. And when the Fair Work Ombudsman took over, my interest peaked in to be able to get involved in the work health and safety side of the business, including industrial relations. So from my perspective as a psychosocial and industrial team, we manage both the psychological risk complaints that come into Safe Work SA, and we also deal with the remaining long service leave industrial relations type inquiries. So been around a long time, and I love the work that I'm doing at the moment.
So two very long serving public servants there, which is fantastic. I've 9 years in public service before I came here, and I did also find it incredibly rewarding. So good on the both of you for sticking with it and contributing to the betterment of our society.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So, obviously working in two different teams at the moment. Jason, you're on the education team. So how does the inspection team and the education team to work together at Safe Work SA?
Well, we work collaboratively in a number of different ways. And I find that the work that we do complements the work of the inspectorate in terms of their focus primarily on compliance and enforcement. So, for example, there's a proactive compliance campaign underway currently that the psychosocial and industrial team are undertaking. And in preparation for the campaign, industry is notified in advance, and our advisory service team is mentioned in that notification and noting the availability of the service. If they wanted to come to us and seek some information, advice and support, we can work with those businesses in advance of the inspector attending site and carrying out an audit, and we can help them review an existing safety management system or develop and implement a new one. So that's actually underway now. The campaign's active, and so we've been receiving inquiries through to the education team, and we've been providing those businesses with some initial support, getting them ready, helping them prepare for the attendance of the inspector. It seems to work well the way we bounce off of each other.
And so where, as inspectors, where we identify a gap in their knowledge or the information that they do have on board, we do make a suggestion that they contact Safe Work SA's advisory service, and that's either through the health centre or through the advisors that Jason's part of. So we do work very closely together, in a collaborative approach. Yeah.
So is it generally the inspectors that are recommending businesses to reach out to the education team, or is there other ways in which people reach out?
So that's one method. We're fortunate to have referrals from the inspectorate. Businesses in South Australia can access our website, and there's an electronic form that they can complete and send through. We also field inquiries via our help centre, our 1300 number. A service might be recommended at that point as well. And our communications team will promote and market the service, which I must add is a free service to businesses in South Australia. Essentially providing information, advice and support with regards to WHS.
Yeah. So what is the state, I guess, of interest from businesses around psych health and safety? Do you get many inquiries into the education team or does the inspectorate, you know, recommend that people get educated in that space?
Yeah, we do receive a high volume of inquiries via the Help Centre. As the momentum is building across Australia and there's a greater level of awareness around psychological health, we find that, you know, as workers are becoming educated, they're becoming more savvy. They know that under the harmonised legislation, health is defined as being physical and psychological. So there's greater awareness. And so, yeah, many more inquiries are being received.
And then the complaints that we receive as a team builds on that knowledge and the awareness out there that, you know, inappropriate workplace behaviours can lead to psychological injury and is a psychological risk, and they tend to seek assistance from inspectors to ensure that their PCBU, the person conducting a business or undertaking, their employer basically is doing the right thing by them in providing a mentally healthy workplace.
Yeah, terrific. So what does the legislation in SA require of employers in relation to psychological health and safety?
I would say that really it doesn't differ to a normal work health and safety issue or obligation under the Act. The only difference is that it is harder to identify as a psychological risk is to a physical injury. So the legislation requires the same duty to identify the hazards associated with psychological risks, the management of the risks, and providing information, training, instruction, really the same duties under the Act for a psychological injury, same as a physical. So we, you know, as Safe Work SA as a whole, as an inspectorate, the difference is that we are treating psychological injuries, which in some circumstances may not be as easily identifiable from an inspector's perspective, and the enforcement level depends on how the PCBU has managed those risks in accordance with any other risks associated in the workplace under the workplace and safety legislation.
Yeah, so have you found many PCBUs or employers in SA adopting at least the, you know, hazard identification processes to identify the psychosocial hazards?
Yes, and of course it depends on the support available to that PCBU. There are a number of tools available for large organisations, and of course they have access to HR, WHS, whereas the smaller businesses don't have that luxury. And so that's therefore the difference is in regards to, well, how far do we go with referring to the advisors, or how far the compliance issues go. But again, it really does come back to inspectors' judgment on what they would reasonably be expected to know considering their specific circumstances. So we do give that a great deal of thought, and there are a number of options available to us on that as inspectors.
So in our own business, you know, we're starting to see some of the larger employers that we work with just start to dip their toe in the water of hazard identification, risk assessment of psych hazards. So how far have you seen it adopted in South Australia?
There's definitely been a marked improvement over the years that I've been involved in psych risk. And as Jason mentioned, there is an increasing amount of information available. And as it becomes more published and more known, the PCBUs, you know, acknowledge that it's part of their duty under the legislation to do more, and are expected to do more, because reasonably practicable is, well, what should they ought to know, considering that it's so much media coverage, online information as well. So it's definitely, it's not at, you know, the utopia level, but there is a marked improvement in my view in regards to the PCBUs acting on that risk management. I don't know about Jason.
Yeah, just an observation that I've made through my advisory work. Businesses instinctively have already identified the hazards. They know what the hazards are that are present in their work environment. They really need further guidance and support around the next steps throughout the risk management process. So assessing risk, digging into probability 101, and then, you know, consulting the hierarchy of control, what are the most reasonably practicable control measures to implement, et cetera. So that's where most of the guidance and support is needed. They know what the hazards are. It's just really, how do I go about assessing them? And then what are the most appropriate control measures to implement?
Yeah, you're not wrong. We, again, our observation is that, you know, some companies will adopt things like the People at Work survey, roll that out, and then they go, yeah, we've done it. We've done risk management for psych hazards. And we're like, well, that's step one. You've done hazard identification. You haven't even done any of the next steps. So, yeah, so hopefully, yeah, you are having more and more people reach out to you, Jason, and your team around, you know, what are the next steps and what does that look like? How do we do that effectively?
And we have seen a recent increase in people reaching out in the space, seeking advice around psychological health. And again, as we, you know, we mentioned, there's some fantastic resources that have been developed by the various state and territory safety regulators. Of particular note would be the resources available via the Work Health Safety Queensland website. One resource that I think is brilliant that I use in my advisory work is entitled Psychological Health for Small Business. It consists of all of 8 pages, unpacks the risk management process, that the traditional process used for physical hazards is directly transferable to psychosocial hazards and factors. And then it has some really useful guidance around do's and don'ts, so practical tips on control measures. And that actually links into another resource of theirs, which is a template on for psychosocial risk assessing. So that's a great place to begin in terms of particularly smaller businesses wanting to understand more about psychological risk.
Yeah, funnily enough, Angela Martin's episode that came out on Monday this week directly talked to small business, but we missed that resource. So we'll have to link that in the show notes of this episode. Yeah. Yeah, but I agree, Workplace Health and Safety Queensland have some great resources in this area. Yeah.
So can you describe a little bit what the role is of SafeWork South Australia in regulating psychological health and safety?
Yeah. So as South Australia's work health safety regulator, we take receipt of psychological risk complaints. And just to unpack that process a little, most of the time we receive inquiries from workers via our help centre, so our 1300 number, and they will speak to one of our information officers and they'll outline a particular scenario that they're facing in their workplace. And it may center around a number or a combination of psychosocial hazards and factors. So we look at and provide advice around, you know, could be high and low job demands, low control, lack of role clarity, poor organizational justice, a lack of recognition and reward, et cetera, exposure to violent and traumatic events. They may be factors present in the work environment that are feeding into an instance of what is perceived to be bullying behaviours taking place. So we'll provide advice on that. We'll unpack all of the key terminology and provide some guidance in that space. And we'll make it clear to the potential complainant as to our role and what we can and cannot do. And then we will advise the worker that if they wish to proceed, they can complete the complaint form, which is available on our website, or we might provide it to them, complete it, submit it to us, and then that will come through to our psychosocial and industrial team. It will be initially assessed and triaged by the team leader or the PI, and then allocated to an inspector in that team, and they'll commence making their inquiries.
Okay, so what are the can and can'ts that that you guys can and can't do?
When we make contact with the complainant, we are, as Jason said, we do identify what the root causes of their complaints and provide them with advice that our roles as inspectors within the regulator, being SafeWork SA, is that it's not to provide them with an apology, with a compensation, with the dismissal of the alleged, that they're making the allegations against. What we can do is to ensure that primarily whether their allegations have merit and whether the PCBU has done what is reasonably practicable in addressing psychological risk or complaints in the workplace. And it's strictly in line with the Work Health and Safety Act and doesn't include issues such as interpersonal conflict. We can't be the umpire of that. It is strictly in line with, has the PCBU met the obligations under the Act, and or have workers breached the Act by their acts or omissions in causing a psychological injury to a worker. So we do try to manage the expectations of the complainants right from the get-go, because again, some are seeking outcomes that we cannot provide as inspectors under the Act. It just doesn't allow for us to do that.
Yeah, and my own experience is that people can get quite frustrated with, you know, the limits of what a safety regulator can actually do about their situation and their their complaint. And, you know, from an inspector's perspective, it can also be quite frustrating when you can sort of see evidence that, you know, something's not right, but it's outside of your legal arena to actually be able to do anything about it. So, the expectation setting is a really key component of that process. And I think also knowing who you can refer them on to as well. So whether it's referring them on to the Safe Work Ombudsman or somebody else like that. So sort of having a bit of a broader understanding of the industrial relations environment outside of the OHS legislation is important for regulators as well. So Jo, can you take us through what an inspection process actually looks like? So once you've decided, yes, we need to inspect this, we've got sufficient information that there's potentially a problem, what happens next?
Right, primarily, the first step that we do is we ensure that the complainant is aware, again, of what we can do, what we can't do, and then we confirm with them their allegations that they wish us to put to the PCBU for response. And we determine whether it fits within the definition of bullying, whether it is what Jason was saying, a psychosocial issue of high workload, low control, etc. And we go through the process with them in regards to the options available to them for Safework SA to proceed, and in regards to contacting the PCBU, because under the Act, an inspector can't reveal information without authority from that person. So we seek right from the get-go their approval, the complainant's approval, to contact the PCBU to raise their allegations. So once we've got that, then we do make contact with the PCBU, advising them that we received the complaint. And in some circumstances, the complainant may choose to remain anonymous, and then we treat it as a general work health and safety compliance issue. And we go, we believe that we understand that we received the complaint about a psychological risk. The PCBU goes, whoa, 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 who's it from? I want to know. In regards to that, we say, no, it's an anonymous complaint. It could come from anyone. And we go through the allegations that they've made. We don't expect, of course, a response straight away. We send them an email setting out quite clearly our role, our jurisdiction, their requirements to provide a response either on a voluntary basis, or we do have powers under the Act to compel through written advice under either a section 171, which is a notice to provide information or documents, or to a regulator, or section 155 from the regulator themselves seeking information similar to 171. So we provide the PCBU with an opportunity to respond to the allegations. If they were made aware of the allegations, if they were, what actions within their own work health and safety systems did they take? Did they investigate? How was that investigated? Were witnesses spoken to? What was the outcome? All that sort of information is gathered from the PCBU. And what policies and procedures do they have in place? Show us evidence of that. What training have you been providing to your workers? Provide evidence of that. Because in some circumstances, the PCBU will have all the bells and whistles for a policy or procedure, but only show it on induction and no longer considers it further, and it can sit on the shelf gathering dust. So the Act requires the PCBU to provide ongoing training, supervision, instruction. And if there are gaps in that training, we do have the ability to issue compliance notices to get that training up to speed. And then in some circumstances, we may find that the allegations lack evidence that we need as a regulator to prove beyond doubt. However, the systems are in place and we are satisfied that they've utilised and also consulted with staff and training, toolbox meetings, etc. And then we report back as much as we can to the complainant on the outcomes of our investigation. And again, we are still bound by the confidential provisions of the Act. So again, another frustration of the complainant is that they've given us all this information about their experiences with the PCBU. The PCBU has provided us information as inspectors, but as inspectors, we can't advise the complainant what that response was. And that's frustrating for them as well. What do you mean you can't tell me? I need to know. You know, I've given you this information. So again, it's managing that expectation as well. And we do that through the initial stages, as I mentioned, but also during follow-up conversations with the complainant, always reminding them you won't be getting information, you won't be getting information. And sometimes it's, at the end of the day, they still ask for that information. And then we also speak with the PCBU about our findings. If there are any gaps of non-compliance, then we have the ability, of course, as I said, to issue compliance notices, get them to comply with, provide us evidence, and then sign off as and prepare the file for our team leader to consider for closure. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of idea of where we go with investigations. But yes, it does take, it can take some time, and that's also an issue that we deal with the complainant as well.
So you've mentioned there that the burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, under workplace safety legislation, any breaches of legislation, we would refer as inspectors if there is evidence beyond doubt that either the PCBU has breached their obligations under Section 19 of the Act or a worker has, we refer the matter to our investigation team to consider prosecution. Now, prosecution is a criminal offence in regards to the fines are substantial and convictions are recorded. So the cost to the business of a prosecution being the nth degree is that, you know, again, that's why it is so important to get the evidence beyond doubt, because it's such a serious offence we're facing in the employment tribunal.
And so what are some of the consequences should somebody be found guilty through prosecution?
Sure. Look, and again, that's, for inspectors, that's a decision made by the investigation team. But in regards to the National Compliance and Enforcement Policy, you take in the seriousness of the allegations, whether the PCBU has prior history with SafeWork SA, and have they received advice from SafeWork SA about meeting the obligations in regards to psychological risk? What was the allegations? What was the injury sustained by the injured party? And again, the evidence, and again, that all forms part of it.
And I imagine it's much harder to sort of prove that a psychological injury was associated with a work situation.
Yes, yeah, I agree. Again, because of the burden beyond reasonable doubt, the complaints that we get in some circumstances are perceptions in regards to how they're being treated at workplace and whether, and because bullying is widely promoted out in the media, they believe any behaviours that they feel uncomfortable or distressed by is bullying and therefore lodges a complaint. And then that's where we come in and advise them of the terms of the definition of bullying, etc. So yeah, it is very difficult to prove beyond doubt. Yes, I agree. Yeah, there's no way around that, because the legislation as it is at the moment makes it difficult to prove beyond doubt psychological health arising from inappropriate behaviours.
Jason, does your team have a role in sort of during that investigation process as well?
Absolutely. So we do work collaboratively with the psychosocial and industrial team. And for example, upon receipt of a psychological risk complaint, they might refer the advisory service to the duty holder, to the PCBU, in order to review existing systems or perhaps develop and implement a new system of some sort. So we work side by side, just complementing the work that they do, providing that free information, advice and support. So I just wanted to mention a few things, just touching on what Joe had said earlier. Our role as the state safety regulator, and this is true to the other regulators under the harmonized legislation, our role is somewhat limited by way of the design of the legislation, in that there is not currently a definition of bullying in the harmonized legislation, and we defer to the Fair Work Act definition, which is repeated and unreasonable behavior directed towards a worker or a group of workers that results in a risk to their health and safety. So for it to be considered bullying as per the Fair Work definition, it must be both repeated and unreasonable, and it must result in a risk to the health and safety of the worker or workers. And just again, worth noting that the state and territory work health safety and IR ministers were due to meet in February of this year. That meeting's been delayed until April. And on the agenda for discussion during that meeting is the Boland review of the harmonized safety legislation, of which a proposal has been put forth that regulations be introduced that address psychological risk. So if those regulations are inserted into the harmonized regulations, that will enhance the regulator's ability to take meaningful action in the space.
Okay. So that's potentially helpful news for regulators who have adopted the harmonized legislation. That always takes time though, doesn't it? Legislation changes, especially WHS legislation, doesn't necessarily have a huge amount of political capital associated with it, unfortunately. So I guess we do the best that we can in the interim, don't we?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, we are looking forward to seeing what happens with that and whether we do get the updates to the harmonised legislation. So be interesting, wait and see. Hopefully don't have to wait too long. So you talked a little bit about prosecution before, and given the increase that we're seeing in psychological injuries, I'm surprised that there aren't more publicly noted or available examples of when a regulator has prosecuted over psych injuries. Can you share any maybe that you've been involved with in SA that are publicly available?
We have one example that comes to mind. And it's a matter involving a PCBU named Tadmar Electrical Proprietary Limited, and it's a matter relating to the bullying of a construction apprentice. So SafeWork SA successfully secured three convictions relating to a workplace bullying incident in which an apprentice was squirted with flammable liquid and set alight whilst at work in March 2017. An individual named Luke Daniel Chenoweth, a site supervisor, was convicted of a Category 1 offence and fined $21,000 after a 40% reduction for an early guilty plea. A second individual, Jeffrey Rowe, also a site supervisor, was also convicted of a Category 1 offence and fined $12,000 plus costs in relation to the same workplace bullying incident. And Tadmar Electrical Proprietary Limited, the PCBU, was convicted and fined $15,000 after a reduction of 40% after pleading guilty to a breach of Section 33 of the Act. So the convictions were recorded against those two employees and their employer in respect to the bullying of the 19-year-old apprentice. Rowe and Chenoweth, who I've mentioned, pleaded guilty to the charges that they had engaged in conduct that exposed an individual to a risk of death or serious injury or illness, and that they were reckless as to that risk. The details of the bullying was particularly egregious. During a lunch break, Chenoweth squirted a flammable liquid onto the boot and shirt of the apprentice, Austin Courtney, and ignited the flammable liquid. Rowe, the site supervisor, took no steps to stop Chenoweth and himself squirted more flammable liquid onto Courtney's shirt while the shirt was burning. The court noted that both the acts and the omissions of Rowe were serious. Fortunately, Courtney was not seriously injured. And I'll just say that this case serves as an important reminder that health and safety laws extend beyond the actions that someone takes and also include an obligation to ensure that a lack of action does not adversely affect the health and safety of other persons. Bullying should be treated as any other workplace risk, and measures should be put in place to eliminate the risk to ensure that bullying does not occur in the workplace. In addition, all workers should be trained to ensure that they know how and when to intervene if it does. The PCBU, Tadmar Electrical, had a duty to ensure, as far as was reasonably practicable, the health and safety of its workers. In this case, it failed to adequately train and supervise its site supervisors involved in the incident, and it failed to ensure that it possessed and made known to all of its workers a documented bullying and harassment policy. The convictions of Rowan Chenoweth marked the first successful Category 1 prosecutions in South Australia, and it's believed that this was the first successful bullying prosecution under the harmonised work health safety legislation nationally. This is a significant decision for employers and employees because it's the first time that Section 31, which must be recklessly indifferent towards the health and safety of workers, has been used to prosecute individuals in relation to bullying behaviour. So a significant matter that occurred in South Australia.
Yeah, and it made national news. I remember seeing that play out over the course of a week or two on local TV. Yeah. And what you're talking about there in relation to the fines, I mean, individually that's going to hurt. The company, you know, copping a $15,000 fine isn't huge. But the reputational damage, right? You know, that being hauled out would have been massive for that company.
Without a doubt, yeah. Reputational damage is a concern for most businesses, and that would have no doubt occurred in this case.
And it would also lead to a precedent case scenario where if, God forbid, there should be similar incidences that are prosecuted, whether it's Safe Work SA or any other regulator, it does set a precedent that, you know, the indifference is also taken into consideration. I think it's a great result. Not for the guy, of course, but yeah.
So sort of prosecuting people for the bystander effect almost.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
Spot on, yes.
Yeah, acts or omissions.
Yeah,
that's a big thing.
Yeah, definitely. And so were they criminal convictions for the individuals?
Well, I'm not sure, to be honest.
The way that the law's designed, I believe that they are criminal convictions, yeah.
Mm, so even beyond the financial impact, that's a... Yeah, that's a criminal record, so that's a significant adverse outcome for those people, regardless of whether they could afford those fines or not, I suppose.
Yeah,
so that's very serious.
And that was a Category 1 case. Would there be more examples, not that you need to share, but more examples of lower categories where it's been prosecuted successfully?
Not in relation to bullying specifically.
Yeah.
But in relation to any other psych hazards, whether it be sexual harassment or whether it's even just work-related stress that's being contributed to by workload or supervisory pressure?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
It's a difficult standard to meet then to actually get to the point where the prosecutor wants to proceed with the case.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, there are those boxes that need to be ticked. As I said before, again, the evidence available, the witnesses available, the information, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, there are a lot of hurdles to get over in regards because, as we said, it's a serious offence. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jason, did your team get, I guess, an upsurge of sort of inquiries or requests for assistance following that prosecution?
I can't link the outcome and this prosecution to a sudden surge of inquiries directly, but what I can say is that for some time now there has been a steady increase of inquiries received in relation to managing risks to psychological health. So, you know, a good chunk of the requests that we receive via the website might mention psychological health in addition to other concerns that they have, and that is steady and likely to increase further, I'd say. So it is growing.
Mm. And I guess this particular case was sort of a combination of probably bullying as well as workplace violence. Would that be accurate?
Yes. Yep. Fair. Accurate. Yep. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So in relation to what you're doing in South Australia, then you talked about some of the resources that Queensland have available. Is there any new or exciting things that you're working on in the background around psych health and safety specifically from a regulator perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. So SafeWorkSA is a funding partner in the psychosocial risk assessment tool, People at Work, the new digital platform. So we're rolling out our communication and engagement plan right now, promoting it to industry stakeholders. And so I just wanted to mention that because it is a fantastic resource. The way that it's designed, it is geared up towards medium to large size businesses. It's a minimum of 20 respondents. It's a survey-based measurement tool that looks at job demands and job resources. One of the fantastic developments of the tool are all of the supporting resources that are available on the website. So there's a lot of excellent guidance material and information in support of businesses that want to undertake that process. So for anybody that has an interest, I suggest going to www.peopleatwork.gov.au and having a look at the portal, having a look through the resources there and consider running the tool internally.
Yeah, terrific.
In addition to that, we're in the midst of refreshing our website. We do have some great new resources on there. This isn't psychological health related specifically, but for any small businesses that are listening that want to review their existing safety management system or implement a new one, we have a resource entitled Simple Steps to Safety, which is freely available on our website. It outlines all of the key components that make up a safety management system. And linking into that, we have generic pro forma templates that can be downloaded and modified and used as per the needs of the business. And we've also got a online electronic assessment version of Simple Steps that's hosted on Return to Work SA's website. It's a Simple Steps self-audit tool. And that's just a new digitized version of Simple Steps. And that would be a useful process for a business to undertake to carry out an honest self-assessment of where they are in terms of their safety journey. And then that will generate an action plan and provide some further guidance. So that's a really useful resource to small businesses.
Yeah, terrific. And we'll link that to that in the show notes as well so that people can find that easily from the podcast. Yeah, great. So we've talked a bit about, I guess, what you do at SafeWorkSA and the inspection team and the education team, talked about some of the challenges, some of the cases that you guys have worked on and prosecuted. What are some of your hopes for the future of psychological health and safety in South Australia or Australia more broadly?
Okay, sure. Yeah. Look, I'll offer a response to based on some observations I've made during my advisory work. I would highlight the continued importance of considering interpersonal skills and soft skills during the recruitment for particularly supervisory and person management roles. It's still true to say that we recruit primarily based upon an applicant's technical abilities, their perceived competence, experience, etc., but still too little consideration is given to the whole human, their ability to relate to their subordinate workers, to show compassion, to effectively performance manage a worker, to provide constructive feedback, et cetera. And importantly, once we recruit those people to those roles, to provide them with sufficient ongoing information, training, instruction, and possibly supervision if required, but predominantly training. Given the nature of that role. So, and the reason that I mention this is because there is a direct link, I believe, between our current recruitment practices of supervisors and people managers and the types of psychological risk complaints that we receive. Joe mentioned this earlier, in that many of the psych risk complaints that we get are a matter of a subordinate worker being performance managed, wrongfully believing that they're being bullied. When it turns out, a lot of the time, not always, but a lot of the time, it's reasonable management action being taken in a reasonable way. That the supervisor or the manager is lawfully performance managing that worker and providing constructive feedback on their performance. But perhaps due to a lack of interpersonal skills or training, they've handled the process poorly, and thus the subordinate worker believes that they're being bullied. And then eventually we end up getting a psychological risk complaint. So that's one area. And I've spoken to HR practitioners that concur with that observation. And I mean, I think that's something that we can certainly improve on.
Yeah. And Jason, Clive Lloyd, whose episode will come out in the same week as this one, also gave something very similar. In fact, his recommendation, if I remember correctly, was to hire less sociopaths, or like less line managers who are sociopaths. But I think teaching those soft skills right is really important. And it's hard to teach empathy to a sociopath in particular. But having those soft skills and the empathetic response, particularly when you're going through something tough like performance management, I think you're correct. It's very important for line managers to have. Yeah. So you were going to mention another thing as well, Jason.
Absolutely. A few other observations. There's, in my advisory work, there's often a disconnect between the PCBU safety management system and the safe systems of work and how those systems are actually implemented on the ground. The systems rarely reflect the reality of how work is being performed. So that's an ongoing issue that we see across all industries. Another observation would be an over-reliance on employee assistance programs as a first line of defense against risk to psychological health of workers. EAPs are limited by their design. They're often issue specific. So you're entitled to perhaps 3 sessions per topic. And there's rarely a continuity of care with the helping professional, the counselor or the psychologist, in that in the first session, you might see one individual, and the second another, and the third somebody else again. And in order to develop that therapeutic bond between the worker and the helping professional, continuity of care is important. So look, EAPs do play a part, and they can and often are be effective and useful, but they shouldn't be solely relied on. You might complement the EAP with other proactive preventative programs, perhaps a peer support program running aside simultaneously, concurrently, with the EAP. So that's just one observation. And look, just quickly highlighting the continued importance of consultation, meaningfully engaging with workers when we develop these safe systems of work and processes, seeking their input, considering their feedback, and then considering incorporating that feedback, empowering the workers, because they're much more likely to comply and to follow safely these safe systems of work if they've been involved in the development of them. And again, finally, I want to highlight the continued importance of senior leadership commitment. Having senior leaders in the organization, executive managers, et cetera, walking the talk, meaningfully engaging with workers, demonstrating best practice and continual improvement, and adopting a growth mindset. So an essential component in safety.
Yeah, you surely haven't been listening to this podcast, Jason. There's a lot of...
from our songbook.
Yeah, very, very, a lot of shared sentiment there, mate. What about yourself, Joe? What are some of your hopes for the future of psych health and safety?
Following on from what Jason was saying, I believe that my experience is that some employees or workers won't make a complaint to the relevant officer because they don't believe it will be treated seriously. They will be the one that will have to be moved or whatever the corrective actions is taken. So I'm hoping in the future that the PCBUs and workers work together in a more holistic approach in regards to psych risk in the workplace, and that the management does walk the talk and call it out as soon as they see it, that they call out inappropriate behaviours, because it can only grow to something a lot worse, and that the management give authority to supervisors below them to also call it out as well, because they're likely to see it and hear it and act upon it more quickly than a high-level supervisor. So working together, my hopes is that they do work together to get that the whole process in place that allows a worker to feel comfortable enough to say, hey, I've got an issue.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that playing out in the media in Australia over the last month in relation to particularly sexual harassment and sexual assault, and people coming forward with their stories of feeling like they can't actually come forward to leadership because of they're going to be the ones who are, again, victimised after what they've already gone through. So I think that's a really good point that you've raised there, Joe, and very topical.
Thank you, yeah.
Okay, so... we hope we don't really know who listens. We get some people who comment, so we've got a few people that we're aware of who listen. We hope that we've got people in our listenership who are aspiring to work in this field of psych health and safety, and we would love for any words of wisdom or advice that you guys would like to share with them for entering or continuing work in this field.
Quickly, from my point of view, my advice would be there is a growing amount of information. Avail yourself to it. But most importantly, though, that you also take care of yourselves when dealing with these matters all the time, because it could impact your own psychological health. So keep an eye on that as well. Look after yourself and together, safety workplace.
Just to add to that, I would suggest wherever possible, prioritising a real world, you know, practical experience over financial reward or remuneration. If it's necessary to take a step backwards in terms of classification or a step sideways, because the practical experience that you're going to gain is so valuable going forward, I highly recommend that you do that, because the times that I have done that personally, it's always worked out quite well for me.
Yeah, great advice. So, thank you both so much for coming on the show today. I know you're both very busy people, and it was really great for your employer to allow you to be on the show and share some of the stories out of SA. You really are doing some great work down there. So, listeners, that brings us to the end of the show today. So remember, you can watch the video on YouTube if you want to check out the video on the Flourish DX channel. If you don't like listening to an 45-minute, hour-long podcast episode as well, we have something for you. We do have short 2 to 4 minute clips that we post on the Flourish DX LinkedIn page. So please check them out. They're a nice way to catch up with, I guess, some of the key topics that we talk about on each episode. And also, Joel and I are very, very active on LinkedIn. So feel free to reach out to us and connect. Thanks again so much, guys, for coming on. And thanks to our listeners. And we'll catch you next episode.
You've been listening to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. To stay up to date with the latest on psychological injury prevention, follow Flourish DX on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast at www.psychhealthandsafety.com.